Sitting in for George Norrie and coming to you from Coast Toronto affiliate In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010, The Beatles, Dr. Roberts. I mentioned visiting the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland with my boys recently. What a thrill to see the Asher family piano. Of course, Paul was dating Jane Asher. He lived in the Asher family home with Jane. And this was the piano where John and Paul gathered around and composed some of the greatest compositions of the 20th century, including Eleanor Rigby. For the first time, a single burst of cosmic radio waves has been traced to its point of origin, in this case, a galaxy about 3.6 billion light years from Earth, practically next door. Those radio bursts are only millisecond-long radio flashes, and such rapid bursts themselves aren't rare in space, but finding out where they come from is incredibly difficult. People love to believe that they're from an advanced extraterrestrial civilization, and this hypothesis hasn't been ruled out entirely by researchers at Breakthrough Listen, a scientific research program dedicated to finding evidence of intelligent life in the universe. You can read the rest of the story in the news section, where Sean Latasor, our webmaster tonight, has posted that up at coasttocoastam.com. Evidence-based alternative cancer treatments. More of my conversation with Rick Shapiro, author of Hope Never Dies, when Coast to Coast AM continues. Rick Shapiro stays with us. He's a leading consultant, researcher, educator in the field of evidence-based alternative cancer treatments, the author of Hope Never Dies. And he has two messages, two main messages for us tonight. One is, there is no such thing as false hope. And secondly, statistics do not foretell the future. So tell us about another one of the cases profiled in the book, and that is Janet Sommer.
Sure, be happy to. Janet Sommer. Janet had lung cancer, which had metastasized to the pancreas, liver, stomach, and lymph system. Janet was born in 1950 in Ohio. Her parents smoked three packs a day, and Janet was a nurse, actually. She educated nurses, so she had a medical background. She had, in her own words, a poor diet. She was divorced at 40, lived a stressful life. And at the age of 45, 1 month before her diagnosis, Janet felt particularly fatigued. She went to the doctor and was questioning whether or not she had bronchitis. And the doctor said, no, you don't have bronchitis. There's no problem. But then Janet asked a friend of hers, for an antibiotic, and he agreed, but suggested that she get a CAT scan to check to see whether or not she had pneumonia. So she had the CAT scan, and shockingly, after the CAT scan and a follow-up PET scan, it was determined that she had tumors in both lungs, and as I said, the pancreas, liver, stomach, and lymph system. On April 11th, 1995, the diagnosis was convinced and confirmed non-small cell lung cancer. Janet said, and I quote, I was absolutely shocked. The doctor said, you have 3 to 6 months to live. There is no hope. Well, Janet went to get a second medical opinion, and that doctor said at a hospital in Cleveland, you have 3 to 6 weeks to live. Not
oh,
months,
my.
But weeks to live.
Wow.
She liked the first opinion better than the second. She told her son, I am going to die. And on April 18th, 1 week after the 1 week, I apologize. 1 week after diagnosis, Janet had surgery to remove the stomach mass, and she began chemotherapy. The doctor said it might buy a month or two at best. She was supposed to have 6 chemo treatments of Taxol and carboplatin, but 3 weeks after her first dose, just one dose, she went from 114 pounds to 72 pounds.
Wow.
After one dose of chemo. And Janet said, quote, I look like a concentration camp survivor. It was impossible for me to continue the chemo treatments. Janet entered hospice care. Her doctor said, why don't you try something alternative? And Janet said, and again, she had the nursing background. She said, quote, that's for hippies. Anything besides allopathic medicine is nonsense. Janet's doctor said, you have nothing to lose. Look into macrobiotic food. Janet found a macrobiotic counselor from the phone book. Remember those? They used to have something called phone books.
Yes, I do.
And And anyway, Janet said, he didn't promise a miracle cure, but he gave me hope. My lungs were filled with fluid. I was on oxygen, using a wheelchair, and needed help to get to the bathroom. I was fortunate to have an incredible support system of 8 friends who cooked for me on a daily basis. Remarkably, 2 days after I started the diet, I stopped vomiting. During the first 5 months, my tumors kept growing, but slowly. I didn't want any more bad news, so I told my doctor that I didn't want any more scans. Janet continued, I wasn't into deep breathing and prayer, but deep breathing helped alleviate my pain and helped me relax. I also had full body massages, which were soothing. 10 months had now elapsed since I began the diet, and 1 year had elapsed since my diagnosis. I decided to get scanned to see what was going on. I was scared and curious. I had lived longer than most expected. A few days later, after the scan, at 9:30 p.m., my doctor called and said, all your tumors are gone. Those were the best words I had heard since, it's a boy.
Oh, my word, gone.
So, yes, they were gone. So Janet then was encouraged by her doctor to go in front of a tumor board and do a tumor board presentation where there were 15 people in attendance, including oncologists, nurses, hospice workers, and others. And they wanted to hear her story. So Janet said, quote, scans were shown at the presentation. One doctor said, it's impossible that this is the same person. Fractures in the ribs were visible from both scans, substantiating the validity. She said, I'd fractured my ribs many years before, and this convinced the board. This was me. So she had scans from many years before with a fracture on a particular rib, and then the current scan, this was Janet, despite the skepticism of one of the doctors. Another doctor at the tumor presentation said, it must have been the one dose of chemo that did the trick. But another doctor at the tumor board presentation said, that doesn't make sense, because when we give all 6 treatments for this type of metastasized cancer, 6 cycles don't work anyway. So I was thinking when Janet told me this, if they don't work anyway, why are they doing it?
Exactly.
To continue, Janet said, my doctor said, whatever the cause, she is here and this is what she did. Janet said, during my first year in hospice, I gave away many clothes, thinking I was a goner. I learned that stuff is not important. I was in hospice care for 18 months. I believe how I eat impacts every cell in my body. I am now more open and trusting. I used to be cynical and angry. I believe anything is possible. I thank God for my story because it gives people hope. Since I left hospice, life has been great. People who embrace this lifestyle heal, but they must stay with it 100%. I thank God every morning for the new day before my feet hit the floor. And at the end of the interview, Janet said to me, never give up, never give up, never give up.
Hmm. What else do these 20 cancer patients have in common besides being fighters? What else, what other commonalities do they have?
Besides being fighters and having a real attitude that they could make it, it was compliance and adherence to a program. Staying with the program. It's very hard to make transformational changes in one's life. We all have the habits that we grow up with and live with, but to tell somebody you need to make transformational dietary changes or to perhaps ingest 50 or 60 specific supplements a day, or perhaps to go through various mind-body exercises, those are hard things to do. And when you're being told by your family, and you're getting a lot of peer pressure that you should stay with a strict standard of care, and you deviate and include other kind of integrative and complementary therapies, it takes a lot of courage, and it's very hard to do that, to change one's habits and to have faith that these things are going to work. So I think it's compliance, it's adherence, it's attitude, and also being a self-advocate. It's important that it's your life. You need to make these decisions. Again, as we said before, standard of care is nothing fantastic to write home about, because last year over 600,000 people died of cancer and 1.7 million people were diagnosed. And Cancer is now about to surpass heart disease as the biggest killer in this country. So we really need to bring other therapies to the table. So adherence, compliance, and attitude are major forces that will help people in their quest to find health and to get to be healed from this insidious disease.
So can you engage in some of these alternative cancer treatments, say, for example, the nutritional regimens or the supplements, et cetera, while you're doing the standard of care, whether it's radiation, chemo, or surgery?
The answer to that is mixed, and it depends on the doctor. For example, when it comes to chemo, as we discussed earlier, there's the chemosensitivity testing by Dr. Nagurney, and there's another doctor named Dr. Wiesenthal, by the way, in Southern California, the only two doctors I know in the country that offer this fantastic test. When it comes to mitigating toxicity, and it leads into your question, there are certain botanicals and herbs and certain vitamins that can mitigate toxicity. And some integrative oncologists will say that it is important to do these things, to engage in these supplements, actually during the infusion of chemotherapy to mitigate the toxicity, and if not the day of, the day before and the day after. So there's other things to mitigate toxicity, which I think is an important issue, such as fasting. There's a Dr. Walter Longo, actually, in Southern California, at University of Southern California, that states assertively, and a lot of doctors have utilized it successfully, that fasting the day before, the day of, and the day after one's chemo infusions, you can drink water and light tea, but fasting mitigates toxicity, and acupuncture can also be very helpful immediately subsequent to chemotherapy. But a lot of these therapies, yes, in terms of nutritional and supplementation, are implemented and utilized at the same time as conventional therapy. But your conventional doctors do not want you to frequently because they think it may be what's called counterindicative of conventional therapies. In other words, they feel it may dilute the potency and the power of conventional therapies, be it radiation or chemo. But again, your alternative doctors, your alternative practitioners, and your integrative oncologists, a lot of them say it's beneficial, and there's no demonstrable proof that it actually dilutes and hurts the conventional process. In fact, some say it can potentiate the chemo to work more effectively. And again, there are methodologies to mitigate the toxicity. So
we're going to open the
bag of perspective.
Okay. We're going to open the lines at the bottom of the hour and take calls. But before we do that, we've got about 6 minutes here. Maybe we can try and work in another case study. Can you tell me about Mark?
Sure. Be happy to. Mark Olsden. Mark had brain cancer. He was diagnosed in 1991. His mom and dad, he grew up in Arizona, actually in Phoenix. His mom and dad were divorced when he was 7 years old. He ate a lot of junk food when he was growing up, and he was exposed to a lot of secondhand smoke, as his stepdad liked his Marlboros. And Mark said, and we're going to quote him here and there, but he said, it's 1991, March 1st. I was 26 years old, living in Davis, California, with my girlfriend, Belinda. On the night of March 1st, Belinda was awakened because she heard me making a hissing sound. I was shaking and writhing in my sleep. This wasn't a bad dream. I was having a grand mal seizure. Paramedics took me to the hospital, and the CT scan indicated something, but the doctors weren't sure what it was. They called it inconclusive. Then Mark went back to Phoenix, where his dad lived, and he had an MRI at the world-famous Barrows Neurological Institute. The MRI indicated a brain tumor in his left frontal lobe. Mark was told there was a 50% chance of a recurrence, and if it did come back, it would be more malignant and dangerous. Mark said, it was mind-boggling to me. I simply couldn't grasp the reality of what was happening. With my head shorn and stapled, I entered into a denial phase that lasted almost 6 years. In August of 1991, Mark found a job at a TV station in Sacramento. No one at the station knew of his cancer, so he had to sneak away to get MRIs, and he fretted every time he had to wait for the results. When the evenings rolled around, Mark said he used to get very depressed. He said, by barely dodging a bullet, I felt I had lost control of my destiny. I had the sense that God had issued me a warning to live life to its fullest and with purpose. I needed bigger challenges, so I applied to the graphics design program at Yale University. And to my great joy, I received an acceptance letter. So he and his girlfriend, Belinda, moved to Connecticut. He went to Yale. And after graduation, they moved to Massachusetts, where he began work as a graphics designer. During this time, Mark shared his fears about his brain cancer with his new boss, a woman named Mariana. And at this time, Mark said, both Lee Atwater, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, and Lyle Alzado of the Oakland Raiders, had died of brain tumors. Mark said, if these guys with all their connections couldn't be saved, well, I just couldn't face that. Who would I turn to if I had a recurrence? Mark's friend at the time, his boss, pushed Mark to see a doctor to evaluate his current situation since he hadn't had a scan for 6 years. But he didn't go because he was afraid of what he would discover. He made an appointment, and the doctor said to him, Mark, he said, quote, the doctor said, Mark, look me in the eye. I would not lie to you. The fact that it has been 6 years and you are entirely asymptomatic tells me you will be fine. You need to get your head out of the sand. So Mark decided to have a brain scan on St. Patrick's Day of 1997. His doctor called him with the results and said, are you sitting down? They show a new tumor that is about 5 centimeters. I recommend we have it removed. Mark said, I was filled with dread and shock. It had come back after 6 years. One week later, I met with a doctor who was the chief of neurology at a major northeastern hospital. Mark then had surgery to remove the tumor. Regardless, due to the recurrence, the prognosis remained grim. The neurosurgeon told Mark that he had a glioblastoma multiforme, which was and is the most lethal kind of brain tumor out there. Mark said, my heart sank to the floor. I felt helpless. I felt hopeless. Mark said, when I asked him how long I had to live, the doctor responded, it really depends upon how you take to the treatment. No one can tell you that. In hindsight, Mark said, those were healing words. And as a lesson to all doctors who may read this, Mark said, don't give a specific timeline of survival. I was so glad he did not give me a certain amount of months, because it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right, right. Yeah.
Now Mark was about to embark upon other treatments. First, he underwent 33 rounds of radiation at the maximum dose. After the radiation protocol, Mark decided he wanted to see the doctor who had said, the doctor who had previously said, you're going to be fine. Mark met with him and asked him, I just want to know if anyone has ever survived this. Do I have a 10% chance? The doctor responded and said, I wish I could say your chances are that good. You're wasting your time talking to me. You should be getting your affairs in order and talking to God.
Oh, boy. There we go.
Yeah. Mark then said, for the first time, I really felt the gravity of my situation. I felt he was condemning me to death. And although I never felt more alone and despondent, I was determined to prove him wrong. Next, I started but did not finish chemotherapy. I was supposed to go a full year of 6 rounds, but only went 4 rounds. The chief of oncology was so upset that I quit, he issued a few cautionary tales of patients like me who suffered horribly after their cancer return. Mark then said, I started taking a product called PolyMVA a few days after my surgery. My dad, a doctor, sent me 8 bottles. He had a colleague who had used it successfully. In 1997, there was very little information about it. I took PolyMVA, which is a dietary supplement, simultaneously through my radiation and chemo treatments. I've taken PolyMVA every day since then. Mark continues. On the 11th anniversary of my surgery, I visited my neurosurgeon, and I could tell he was truly surprised I was still alive. I told him about PolyMVA, but like so many physicians, they don't consider it if it is not FDA approved.
Rick, I've got to jump in here. Pardon the interruption. We'll pick this up on the other side. This is absolutely compelling. A giant flightless birds that dwarfed modern ostriches and weighed, get this, nearly half a ton, roamed Europe when the first archaic humans arrived from Africa. According to scientists, researchers unearthed the fossils, thigh bone, and one of the feathered beasts while excavating a cave on the Crimean Peninsula on the northern coast of the Black Sea. It's the first time such a massive bird has been found in the northern hemisphere. I'm just trying to imagine Neanderthals in Paleolithic Crimea, I guess, on a beer and wing night. Remember those pterodactyl drumsticks on the Flintstones? Okay, enough. I'm here all week. Try the Mastodon. All right, when we come back, terminal cancer patients that beat the odds, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. Rick Shapiro stays with us. He's a coach, consultant, educator, researcher in the field of alternative cancer treatments and the author of Hope Never Dies. Before we get to the calls, Rick, let's just finish up telling Mark's story. This was a young man that was diagnosed with a very deadly form of brain cancer, and he started taking this particular supplement. Continue on.
Yes. So on the 11th anniversary of his surgery, he visited with a neurosurgeon who was very surprised that he was alive. This was his prior neurosurgeon. He told him about this supplement called PolyMVA, but many physicians will not consider it if it's not FDA approved and it is a dietary supplement. It has not gone through the rigor of an FDA test and trial. Mark said, "I consider PolyMVA as the major force as to why I'm alive and remain cancer-free today." In addition to PolyMVA, Mark also took a lot of other supplements, vitamin D, calcium, CoQ10, iodine, green tea. Mark also said, "I meditate, I take long walks, and I try to eliminate all the stressors from my life." In a nutshell, Mark says that you need to do everything you can to improve your immune system. And he said, quote, "Make sure your body is as healthy as you can possibly make it. Your immune system needs you now." And Mark closed and said, "Do not accept that your doctor or oncologist has the final word regarding how you will be affected by cancer. I am a bona fide living survivor of a grim prognosis. I am not a statistic." One real quick comment, Richard, when it comes to these supplements, they will never become FDA approved because, according to Tufts University, it costs about $2.5 billion, with a B, to go through the entire study, which takes frequently 10 to 15 years. And nobody's going to spend that kind of money on a study unless they can have some kind of return on investment. And obviously, pharmaceutical companies generate billions of dollars by manufacturing these drugs when they can get a 20-year patent and sell them globally. But alternative types and natural types of supplements and vitamins, things of this type of protocols will never go through an FDA because you cannot patent them. And
right.
Can imitate them.
And well, we've got to change the rules. We've got to change the rules of the game, no question, with the FDA
absolutely.
Approval.
Because let's be beneficial. Yes.
Let's say hi to Kenny east of the Rockies in Milton, Florida. Good evening. Good morning, Kenny. Welcome to Coast.
Hey, Rick. Hey, Richard. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I'm 61 years old, and I was diagnosed with prostate cancer about 3 months ago. On the right side, my Gleason score is 7. It's 4+3. And I was scheduled for robotic surgery on the 19th of July, and I postponed it because it's a big decision, and I was wondering what your thoughts were on CBD oil and fighting cancer.
CBD is a new phenomenon. There's a lot of promise with CBD. There are those who believe, and out of the last three or four conferences I've been to, there have been people talking about CBD in various forms. CBD is looked at frequently as something that mitigates side effects. But there's a new body of evidence, but it's rather new, that says not only is it perhaps something that mitigates side effects, but it also can have an anti-cancer effect, not just mitigating side effects. But the jury is out, and it's a little bit early. I think it's something that can be utilized, especially with side effects. But if I had a prostate cancer situation, I would personally visit with, in your neck of the woods, some naturopaths who have a specialty in oncology, some integrative oncologists, certainly people who have a prostatectomy. The side effects can be significant. You should research them before you go forward if you're contemplating doing that. But there are a lot of people out there with prostate cancer who live 20, 30 years and can stop the progression of that prostate cancer without getting prostatectomies. But I would certainly look into some other therapies. And if you think you can adhere to some other strict therapies, take a look at those. There's also radiation. But CBD specifically, not sure about that. The jury is out, and it's very, very new when it comes to the cancer world.
Kenny, good luck. All the best. Thank you so much. West of the Rockies, Glenn is in Seattle. Glenn, welcome.
Hi. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi there.
I was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer 2 years ago, and did a course of chemo, and then switched oncologists to a place where they would actually remove the original tumor, and the metastasized spots in the liver. Recently, the lung spots that they weren't sure were metastasized have started growing. And so I need to get treated for that. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions to try for that.
Did you say, I'm sorry, did you say you had gone through chemo before? You had not?
Yeah, I did a course of chemo before my surgeries.
Oh, okay. If it were me, if you were open to, and how did you react? How did you respond to the chemo?
Oh, I did, I don't know if I should mention the course I was on, but I did Xeloda capecitabine pills, and it was pretty rough. And then oxaliplatin is a pretty mean, brutal drug. So I had issues, but, you know, I just toughed it out and you know, made it through. Sure. And now what my choices are with my current oncologist are either full Fox or full Fury. And so I need to make the decision as to which of those to choose. During the first round of, before and after, when I was able to take it, I saw a naturopath, and they recommended turkey tail mushroom powder and curcumin. And so I was doing that. But I had to go off of it during chemo because it's a blood thinner, so it adds to the blood thinning effects of the chemo. And then after surgery, I started up with that and did those and was trying to eat a healthy diet, but unfortunately the lung spots grew, and I don't have any mutations that make me a candidate at this point for immunotherapy. So on the regular standard route, I'm stuck with, you know, either one of those standard treatments.
Right. If it was me and I was contemplating chemotherapy, I would contact Dr. Robert Negourney, N-A-G-O-U-R-N-E-Y. He's in Southern California. Again, I think that I would get a chemosensitivity test, because you can go with a particular chemo protocol that may work. It may work moderately, or it may not work at all. And then you're putting yourself through these harsh treatments. But if you get a chemosensitivity test, if it can be done, if a tissue sample can be excised, you can pretty much be assured that you will get on the regimen that works for your particular mutations and your particular cancer cells. In terms of the nutritional arena, there's a woman in Utah. She wrote a chapter in the book, as well as Negourney, and I think she's the number one person in the nutritional world in North America. And I'm talking about strict adherence to a very strict diet. In terms of supplementation, there's a guy named Donnie Yance, Yance, who also wrote a chapter. And these are people I would call if I was told tomorrow I had cancer. He's up in Oregon, and I think he's the most renowned person in North America regarding botanical approaches. These are people I would talk to. And if I was going down the chemo road, I would also get with a naturopath who specializes in oncology to utilize various measures to mitigate that toxicity, because, yes, it can be very rough. And again, there are things that can be done to mitigate toxicity if you go down that road and implement other things simultaneously. That's what I would do. Sometimes it's finding the right doctor. And there's a doctor also in Chicago, Dr. Keith Block, B-L-O-C-K, and he's done fantastic things with cancer patients. He's an integrative doc, and he utilizes a specialized type of chemo called chronomodulated chemo, meaning timing as in chronology, and the chemo is given at certain times of day when your cancer cells are most vulnerable. And he also utilizes alternative methodologies and has had fantastic luck. I don't know the doctors that you're using now, but I'm here to tell you again, based on the 20 stories in the book and 500 people I've met, despite the fact you have a stage 4 scenario, keep fighting, keep searching.
Absolutely. Glenn, all the best. We wish you all the best. Thank you for calling. Let's say hi to Scott in Tennessee on the wild card line. Scott, welcome to Coast AM.
Good evening. I have one of my best friends was diagnosed with cancer back about a year ago. He had a large tumor on one of his kidneys. They removed the kidney and some of the tissue around that. And he had spots show up in his lungs. And he's been trying a lot of different experimental, I guess, treatments. And sometimes they help a little bit, but after several treatments, some are getting bigger. Well, last Friday, they found a tumor about an inch big in his brain on last Friday. They cut it out Saturday. And it seems to be what he tells me, it's called spindle cell sarcoma. And I was wondering if you'd had any experience with that or know of any doctors that have been able to, because I understand it's pretty hard to treat. I just wondered if you had any advice on that.
Spindle cell sarcoma in the brain?
Yes.
I'll be candid with you. I am not familiar specifically with that. I will say that Dr. Gene Wallace, Dr. PhD Gene Wallace in Utah, does have a significant specialty in brain cancer. She's the individual in the nutritional world, but she also advises oncologists throughout the United States and North America and actually the world. And she's somebody, when it comes to brain cancer, I would definitely talk to. But that particular type of cancer, I'm not specifically familiar with, quite honestly.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it seems to be fairly rare. He's going to like the Farber Hospital or something up there in Boston.
Yeah, Farber's a conventional establishment, and that's, you know, it's that's okay. But I would also, if I were him, I would ask his oncologist up there if he or she is willing to work with other complementary practitioners who can bring other therapies to the table. Because I think, again, it's extremely important to bring the full breadth of therapies that can be beneficial to people, regardless of whether it's brain cancer, pancreatic cancer, lung cancer, liver cancer, things that have metastasized. These other therapies can be profoundly beneficial. And it's really important that somebody at Farber will be willing to work with others. He should take the bull by the horn, though, and call some of the people that I mentioned earlier who can help with alternative therapies in addition to conventional therapies.
Scott, thank you for calling, and all the best to your friend. Let's try to work in one more here. First-time caller Ken is in Fort Worth, Texas. Ken, good evening, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
I believe the cancer is caused by the lack of naturally occurring cyanide in a complete chemical complex like apple pits, cherry pits, and apricot pits. And there's a couple of books, one by G. Edward Griffin, World Without Cancer, and another one called Death of Cancer by Harold Manner. Have you ever seen those books, or do you know where you can find them?
I'm not familiar with them.
You ought to find them.
All right, I'm not familiar with them. I don't know them.
Thank you for that, Ken. What about, back in the 70s, everyone was talking about Laetril, and I think Steve McQueen went down to Mexico, and what are your thoughts on that? Was that a scam, or is there some validity to it?
Actually, there's a lot of people who think it was a scam. I do not think it was a scam. There's a Dr. Ralph Moss, who's a PhD in Pennsylvania, who was fired by Memorial Sloan Kettering, the major cancer center in New York City, because he was, and this is in the public arena, so I'm not speaking out of school. In fact, there was a movie done about it. And Dr. Moss was about to write a major article regarding Laetril while he was working at Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York City, and he was told he could not write that article, and if he did, he would be fired, because he was fine that Laetril was bringing benefit to cancer patients. I also happen to know one of the doctors who worked with Steve McQueen, actually, in Mexico, and I've had dinner with this doctor a couple of times, and he says it was not cancer that ultimately killed Steve McQueen. So we have to be careful when the press gets a hold of something and says he tried something and it didn't work. Frequently, a cancer patient may be way down the line. The immune system may be terribly compromised, and nothing may not necessarily work. But there's no guarantees. But there are people that can live despite the fact they were told they had 3 weeks to live. But regarding Laetril, I would not say it's necessarily a scam or something that was promoted by a charlatan. There is some evidence that it can be effective.
How do people get a copy of Hope Never Dies, Rick?
They can get a copy of it through Amazon, Amazon.com. The book is sold via that outlet. You can go to your local bookstore and request the book if it's not on the shelves. Or you can go to the website, HopeNeverDies.com, and order the book through Amazon or local bookstores through HopeNeverDies.com.
And are you still available for consulting and coaching cancer patients?
Yes. People can reach me through the website at HopeNeverDies.com and email me, and I'd be happy to get back to them.
Rick, it was great talking to you. Thank you so much for spending the last 2 hours with us.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Rick Shapiro, Hope Never Dies. All right, when we come back, open lines, 2 hours of open lines and taking us into the break. Here's Otis Redding and I've Got Dreams to Remember right here on Coast to Coast AM.